Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast, a podcast that generates positive energy. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and talk show host. And on today's episode, I interview Dr. Lauren C. Scott, energy expert. We talk about whether rig counts matter anymore. Should we be using a new measuring stick in oil and gas? Plus, global oil and the new state of energy. We have China investing $84 billion into West Virginia's energy. Unknown shale plays across the world. Continental Resources shipping crude oil to China. Plus, North American power in terms of oil. All that's discussed with Dr. Lauren C. Scott. Plus, energy PR. Has it been too politicized? And what needs to happen? In just a moment, our exclusive interview with Dr. Lauren C. Scott. But first, I want to take a moment to ask you folks if you could please check out our website, The Crude Life. Click on the sponsors link. Take a look. See if there's any sponsors that you might know on there. They keep interviews like this free, and they literally keep our lights on. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Well, don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Greg Tavine of Emerging Prairies has to say about Hatch coaching.
When I think of the world that I want to live in, it's with people that care, that take risks, that reinvent themselves, reinvent their organizations, reinvent their industries. And Eric's a model citizen for that. He's trying to solve problems. He's trying to bring people into those solutions. He does incredibly well, but he lives generously. I think a community filled with people like Eric that are solving problems, giving it their best, and creating an environment for others to lead and soar and succeed, that's the place I want to live. And so Eric's the type of person that's in my community, and I'm really grateful for that.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. All right, let's see. Dr. Lauren C. Scott on the line with us here, and we're going to talk a little energy. Hey, before we get into some of the other topics real quick, have you been reading or do you know much about these like super pads that they've been talking about, these super wells?
Not a whole bunch about them, but this is an industry that has, it just has the most ingenious people in it. And if you look at things, just simple things like output per well since 2007, when all this started, it's an amazing thing to see the growth in that as people have figured out ways to use different kinds of propellants and use more sand in the propellants. And how they just going about spacing the stages where they do the fracking. I mean, all this stuff is just ingenious what they've done. And my expectation, they're so keen on keeping their cost down, so they get that break even point down, that they're doing things on the well site too. I mean, I know that they're moving very close now. I think to all the rigs. The rig floor being almost all automated as opposed to having a rough deck. So there's all kinds of really cool things to watch if you like this sort of thing, to watch in this industry.
Well, I wanted to ask you about rig counts here. You mentioned something about the flow and that sort of thing. Rig counts, I've been hearing over the past 6 months, call it a year, that maybe the industry needs to start looking at rig counts differently. Now what that means, they don't know yet, but it just didn't seem to have the same, I guess, economic identifier that it did in the past. So before we get into that a little bit, what is the historical and what do kind of rig counts indicate? You're one of the top energy minds in the world. Every day people get up and they look at rig counts. What exactly are they looking for, just kind of at a very broad brush 101 type thing when it comes to rig counts?
Well, usually there's a very high correlation between what happens to rig count and what happens to production, right? And so when the rig count, at the very high, when the price of oil is back $110 or so, $110 a barrel, the rig count in the United States is about 1900. And the U.S. oil production was really rising very rapidly. And then, of course, it dropped down from 1900 down to 400 range. And sure enough, output started dropping. So there, and then now, the rig count is back up around 900. And sure enough, oil output has increased. But what has happened, I think, is you're getting more output per rig. So it's not the same one-to-one correlation, let's say it was back in, you know, 7 or so. And the very reason is because of what we were talking about earlier. In 2007, when we first started doing the fracking, a well in the Bakken play would produce about 100 barrels of oil per day. Well, they've now got that up around 1,100 barrels of oil per day. So the same number of rigs is going to produce 10 times more oil than the same rig in 2007. So I think that's part of what's going on, is that the people are just getting so clever about more efficient ways of drilling and then more efficient ways of fracking the wells so they get more output from a given rig. And that, I think that's why we're starting to see a little bit of a disconnect between the two. But generally speaking, it's still the same signal. Rig count starts to decline. You're probably going to see the oil price, oil output decline too. And when it goes up, you're going to see oil output go up as well.
I remember Lynn Helms and I talking about this a few times, just because over the years, last few years, you know, the downturn and low oil price and all these things. And I still would say, well, North Dakota is still drilling 1 million barrels a day. So, I mean, I get the fact that there's a lot of that, but we're still pumping out 1 million barrels a day. And then I asked Helms that, and he said maybe there, you know, 6 months ago, he said, I do think we need to start looking at it differently. And he didn't know how either, you know. And you mentioned the increased production. And is there anything to do with maybe the horizontals or the lateral drilling? Can that be brought into play in any sort of algebraic formula? Am I off base here?
No, I don't think you are. I mean, the engineers probably have an algebraic formula for this. But, I mean, the main thing is that in both sides of the coin, both the drilling efficiencies, like you can drill a rig now in probably a third the amount of time that you drilled it back in 2007. So the drilling efficiency has improved. They just learned how to move rigs around and move rigs and also drill more than one well from a given rig. And then once they drill it, the fracking process, the use of proppants again, and then the you know, what they do is they take that horizontal section and they break it up into stages. Well, how you break that up into stages, you used to break it up maybe 16 stages, now you break it up into more than 60 stages. So, you know, make the smaller stages, and then the way you frack them a lot closer together. Everything, every clever thing they can come up with, they've come up with, that's resulted in more oil per well. And so you guys can have a reduction in your well count from where it was, say, back in 2013, 2014, but you might still have almost the same amount of production with fewer wells because you're more efficient at it now. You know, where you were getting 100 barrels per rig or per well, now you're getting 1,100. Well, you don't have to have as many wells to get your output going, right?
How about when it comes to the ducts or the uncompleted wells, the refracts? How about when it comes to that? Do they play into this at all with when it comes to rig counts and in the production numbers?
Well, the ducts for sure do, because you can have a reduction in the rig count. The rig count has to do with whether the sucker is drilling the hole or not, right? And the last time I looked at the number of ducts in the United States, it was something on the order of 4,000. So there's a bunch of wells out there that have already been drilled that all you have to do is go frack them, and you start getting production. So you can have zero change in the rig count, but you go out there and you frack those 4,000 ducts, and you're going to get output, right? That's totally unassociated with the rig count today. It may be associated with the rig count a year ago, but it's not associated with the rig count today. So you get some weird situation where the rig count goes down, but production goes up simply because you're now fracking previously drilled wells.
How about this new stage of oil that we're in right now? When we talk about global oil, whether it be from an OPEC standpoint, or I mentioned in my email to you, you know, China is investing $84 billion just in West Virginia's energy. You know, Continental is one of many companies now shipping crude oil to China. Trump's pushing for Canada, Mexico, U.S. to kind of be a North American power of oil. So What are you seeing when it comes to the global oil? Oh, yeah, even Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, so even some fingers in the geopolitical side of things. The way I'm looking at this thing is this global oil economy is here, and now we're just starting to see the execution of it.
Well, I mean, I will tell you that there's been something nagging at me for the last several years as this. I mean, this truly was a shale revolution. We're not overusing that word when we say revolution, because it changed everything in the oil and gas side. I mean, it changed us from our oil output in the United States declining and declining pretty rapidly to suddenly growing, and now we're producing record levels of oil, the levels of oil we've never produced before. So it was a true revolution that has taken place. And the thing that's been kind of worrying me a little bit, making me a little bit nervous, is the fact that there are shale plays in other countries. We know there are shale plays, for example, in Europe, but happily for us, those crazy people have decided to ban fracking across the European Union because the Greens are just incredibly powerful there, and they've convinced them that it's bad for their drinking water. And so, luckily for us, they're not drilling in their place. But you got places like China, and you got some places in South America that also have shale plays. They just don't have the technological skills to harvest it. It's going to be a little bit worrisome if they start producing oil out of their shale plays. That's going to bring an awful lot of oil on the market. That's going to have a tendency to bring the price down, which is not something that an oil state like North Dakota or an oil state like Louisiana is very happy about. So I think what people need to do is to kind of keep a wary eye on what happens to the shale plays in other countries. I guarantee you OPEC's doing that right now. They're watching that. They started out thinking the United States was their only fly in the ointment, the only burr under their saddle, if you like. But there is the very real, at least geological possibility, that problems will start to arise in China and in South America and a couple other places in the world.
Dr. Lauren Scott on the line with us here. Just kind of wrapping up your final question. Over the holidays, very interesting, went to the Bakken, went to the Niobrara, and some of the reactions either at the hotels or from people when it came to the energy industry kind of took me back a little bit, because these were primarily pretty energy, thick places, and they were almost like tiptoeing a little bit because the bottom line is it became a little too politicized, the energy industry, and all of a sudden people are mingling in right to life and gun control issue topics and that sort of thing, and you're just trying to have a conversation about how work's going, and all of a sudden you're caught up in a political talk here. Are you finding this at all, that the energy industry seems to be getting a little too politicized for really turning a light bulb on?
Not so much. I mean, I think the oil and gas industry, if you are a green effector, you're really heavily invested in the green movement. You need to understand they hate oil. Matter of fact, they hate fossil fuels. And their objective, one of the reasons they object, for example, in Louisiana, we have a pipeline that we're trying to get built, 167-mile pipeline. And the people who hate fossil fuels, they are making the argument that adding 167 more miles of pipeline to a state that has enough miles of pipeline to circle the globe four times, that adding another 167 is apparently going to tip us over and cause, environmental catastrophe. They're making that case. They're trying to make people believe that. And the reason is because they really believe that pipeline's bad. The reason is they want to keep the oil and the natural gas in the ground. And apparently these people are not real good with math. Because they're really good with math, they can figure out if you keep oil and gas, natural gas in the ground, you think you're cold right now, you've got no idea how cold you're going to be without fossil fuel around.
Yeah, that's what we always like to say. Let's just turn the light off, like in North Dakota, at the end of the day, in North Dakota, I think like 70-80% is powered by coal. And you know, coal's been under attack for a decade, and I always laugh saying, if you like turning your lights on, then stop harassing coal.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, sometimes I want to say, well, okay, well, let's do this for a month. Let's just take a month and don't use any oil, don't use any natural gas, and watch what happens. Well, that movement will go away and nothing flat. When people see how difficult it is to move around, how difficult it is to move food around, how difficult it is to stay warm or stay cool, depending on where you are, it's amazing. And there's no way in hell that wind and solar are going to fix that problem. They're just way too tiny, way too unpredictable. Sun doesn't shine all the time, wind doesn't blow all the time. And people say, well, we can use batteries. Well, what? You think electricity comes out of a socket in the wall? Electricity doesn't come out of a socket in the wall. It has to be generated by coal, natural gas, fuel oil, typically by fossil fuels. So it's a hairy mess, but that's what life is like out there right now.
Yeah, I guess so. I tell you what I've seen is honestly a very proactive industry, an industry that wants to constantly be ahead of the curve. And, you know, really when you look back, you know, the EPA was created by Richard Nixon. And even Ron Paul, who's probably one of the most libertarian Republicans there is, he's even said, you know, there is a need for the EPA in terms of general stop dumping toxic waste into rivers, that sort of thing, you know, but not all the way to where, no, you cannot, you know, pump a natural gas molecule out of the ground. And that's where I think the extremism has gotten to the point to where we've gotten so past common sense to where I laugh at our DAPL protesters in North Dakota. You know, we're still cleaning up that fossil fuel garbage they left behind.
Right. And no question about that. Matter of fact, I think what you're already seeing the U.S. economy starting to grow, pick up its growth pace significantly since Trump came in. And one of the reasons is Trump took his pen and undid what President Obama did with his pen. You look at the number of pages in the Federal Registry. Look what happened to the number of pages in the Federal Registry during the 8 years of the Obama administration. It was big increase, especially in this last year. Unbelievable number of regulations. Well, what is happening now is that the President Trump is going back and with the same pen. He's erasing those things. And, you took Principles of Economics we teach that regulations, adding regulations, shifts the cost curves of firms upward and causes them to produce less and hire fewer people. And when you lower cost curves and you increase output and increase employment. And that's what we're starting to see already. You're starting to see 3% growth in real gross domestic product being common, okay, instead of something that never happened, certainly on an annual basis, never happened during the Obama years because of this. And I think one of the primary reasons is the tremendous amount of regulations that came out during his tenure.
Dr. Lauren C. Scott, quick plug for, are you still speaking? Are you being a professor? What are you doing these days? Are you retired nowadays? What are you doing?
Well, I retired from LSU back in 98. I taught at LSU for 30 years, but I have a speaking firm. I haven't, I've had the wonderful opportunity to speak up in North Dakota about three times over the past, since 2007. And then I give about 50, 60 speeches a year, around the country. And then I have an economic consulting firm that we do out of that we do the public speaking, but also do we do a lot of impact studies. We're doing right now an economic impact study of the energy industry on the state of Louisiana, and talking about refineries and pipelines and oil and gas extraction. And then we're about to start up one. There's ExxonMobil has four big facilities here, a refinery, I think the third largest refinery in the United States, and then they got three other chemical plants and plus a lube plant. And we do an economic impact study of that on the local community to help people see just how important it is to have these firms in our area because of all the extra the jobs they create through the multiplier effect as well.
All righty, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time today.
Okay, bud. Jason, good to talk to you again.
And that was Dr. Lauren C. Scott, energy expert. of Lawrence Scott Associates. To listen to this podcast or other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly Crude Life newsletter. Plus, we're on social media. All of those social media links, like Facebook and Twitter, can be found at thecrudelife.com. Once again, I'd like to thank you very much for supporting The Crude Life. And if you could support our sponsors, we'd appreciate that very much. And I know they would appreciate it as well. Plus, they keep interviews like this free and they keep our lights on. And that's going to do it for this episode. My name is Jason Spies, and this is The Crude Life Podcast, generating positive energy. We'll see you next time, folks. It seems everywhere I go these days, someone is telling me about the success of Hatch Coaching. Listen to what professional speaker Mark J. Lindquist has to say.
He is a person in this market and now in markets across the country with Hatch Coaching that is revolutionizing the way people approach the business. He's reinventing the way people look at the people model. That's why he brings in hundreds of people from all over the country who are trying to figure out how to do what he's doing in their market.
For more information, call 701-212-1572 or visit coachingwithhatch.com. That's coachingwithhatch.com. The music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. To find out more about the Moody River Band or their music, visit our website, thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musician tab. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab.